You're listening to Around the Galaxy with Pete Fletzer. We would be honored if you would join us.
This is Pete Fletzer. On this episode of Around the Galaxy, we're joined by fellow podcaster and canon junkie, Jerry Cable. Join us as we talk about being a millennial Star Wars fan, growing friendships through fandom, and of course, Jar Jar Binks. So strap yourselves in, relax, and enjoy this journey around the galaxy. Welcome to episode number 58 of Around the Galaxy, the Star Wars fan talk show. I am your host, Pete Fletzer. Thank you so much for joining us. If this is your first visit to Around the Galaxy, welcome aboard. And if this is a return trip for you, well, welcome back. If you like the show, please do us a favor. Like, subscribe, share, rate, and review it. If you review the show, who knows? You may be selected to win a fan pack from Around the Galaxy, and you might even get your review read right here on the show. You know, I want to just start by saying I know it's a very, very strange time for everybody. We are dealing with coronavirus around the world, and we're dealing with the repercussions of that, whether it's social distancing or dealing with being out of work or dealing with trying to work remotely or whatever your situation might be. I just want you to know that this hopefully becomes a respite. There's a place where you can hang out, whether it's on social media through Twitter, following us on Twitter at ATGcast, or checking out, listening to conversations about Star Wars here on Around the Galaxy. We want to be here for you, and we want to continue that by talking to you on social media. So I don't like the phrase social distancing. Social distancing sounds sounds like something we don't want to do. We do want to be distant physically from people, just for our own health and safety and theirs. But we should definitely stay social. Social is what keeps us human. And that's one of the really cool things about this particular episode coming in at this time is the fact that this is a conversation I had with a guy named Jerry Cable. You may know him as the Canon Junkie on Twitter. He's also one of the co-hosts of the Bombadcast podcast. Great guy. And we met literally over social media just almost a year ago. When we came online, Jerry reached out to me and we talked to each other back and forth and found out we have a lot of the similar interests, and it was great to get Jerry on the show. So I'm really excited to bring you an hour and a half with Jerry Cable. So Jerry, thank you so much for joining me. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Pete. Doing awesome, man. I'm just so excited to be here with you tonight. So I'm glad to be here.
It's cool. Yeah. I mean, it's funny, this sort of network of people that I was saying it just the other day, sort of this concentric circles of people who've gotten to be friendly and friends on Twitter and social media through all the stuff that we do that we do as podcast hosts and just social media people. And
right.
And you and I and Scotty have really hit it off. We've been,
had the, yeah, man.
The pleasure of being on your show during your big countdown. But for those of you who don't know Bombadcast, maybe Jerry, tell us a little bit about you and the show.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I started doing like YouTube stuff about, I think about August of 2018. And I was doing my own, like, you know, I go by Canon Junkie.
Yeah.
On Twitter and stuff, you know. And I was doing like a Canon Junkie page, and I was, you know, celebrating 100 subscribers and stuff and all that. And I think that was my highest milestone on there. But, you know, I was kind of doing my own thing, and I had purchased tickets for Celebration for the first time in my life because it was going to be like 2 hours from, I live like 2.5 hours from Chicago.
So it was driving.
And so, it was like so fortuitous. Mm-hmm. And, I just was lucky enough to have my wife go, you need to go. Like there's no way you need to stay away from, you absolutely have to go. And so she was behind it too. And so, with everyone's blessing and all that, I headed off to Chicago, and, I met someone for the first time face to face that I had had interactions with online. We both were kind of following John, James, and Lacey over at the Resistance broadcast.
Yep,
and stuff. Job. And, you know, like we would always like kind of chime in on their posts and all that. And I always thought Scotty was a cool guy and stuff. And then here we are. I went to Chicago all by myself to this, my first convention, like right. ever. Uh-huh. Like it was, I was like crazy intimidated. I was like, I'm going by myself. Like I'm staying in like the,
so you didn't,
I'm originally a country bumpkin.
Hang out with anybody out there. You were just going, you was like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, man, I'm going to do this because I got to, but I was like, I know what I'm going to do. I know who I'm going to hang out with. I'll try to find people, you know, I'm going to like try to maybe hang out with Doug Chang or something. But, I ended up meeting Scotty and his lovely girlfriend Katie, and day one at the Resistance meetup, and it was like towards the end of the day, and then I went home. I went to the hotel, had a giant pizza, and the next day they just happened to let me hang out with them forever, and then like we kind of formed a bond there, and they let me, for some reason they let like a 30-year-old bearded child like just hang out with them for most of the weekend. And, I mean, most people were like, hey, is that Zach Galifianakis? Like, who is it? And so it's just, I get that a lot, but, I don't know. The rest is just history with that. But later this summer, I was like, man, I really want to like talk more about Star Wars. And I want to talk with someone who I enjoy talking with. And I was like, I'm going to call up Scotty J-Ro and see what he's up to. And, once I made that first text, Pete, it was like less than a week and we were already like recording with, the Science Fictionary, Coruscant Radio Underground and stuff, yep. Andrew and Marisha over there. And then we recorded before that we recorded our first, like it was our, test episode and just ended up yep. being episode, zero, we called it.
Yep. Yep. And I listened to that because yeah. I remember you sent it over to me and you said, can you give me your feedback on it? I don't know if I ever gave feedback on it, but it doesn't matter because you're rolling now. So,
yeah. Well, I guess it did turn out pretty good and stuff. So, we have people listening still. So, we don't really know why. We just love talking to each other. So, and I know that's why a lot of us end up doing this because, I was listening to your episode with Tom and, you guys were talking about how, you know, we just like talking about this stuff more than, you know, we have friends that are into Star Wars and stuff, but they're not as into it as we might be. And so,
yeah. So let me ask you, cause that was something that I've sort of been thinking a little bit about lately is, and I don't know if it's because I'm spending so much time on my damn phone and following Twitter at, you know, every time there's a 3 minutes of nothing going on.
It's hard not to.
It really is. It really is. But I find that I almost would say, and this sounds maybe if a psychologist is listening, he can analyze me.
call in.
But it almost feels like there's two sets of friends that you end up having. Cause you know, I got all my quote unquote real world friends and we drink and we play poker and we're in bands yeah. and we do all that stuff. And we talk about Star Wars to a certain level. They come with me. I sort of, you know, lead the charge for the opening weekends for the movies right. and then we get together, but it's a different thing. And then there's this really kind of unique friendship that happens in Twitter among people who are, who I think we all come across as being full-time Star Wars nerds, but the reality is it's only when we're kind of on Twitter or in these sort of
right.
environments, but we let go big. Like we jump in with all kinds of conversations.
Yeah, man. We go to Twitter and on these mics and stuff to have the conversations that would make people turn into that meme of the whoever that girl is like explaining something, you know, to yeah. that woman on the couch under the blanket. Yeah. Like it full on, like, and you were saying you have your friends who they like Star Wars. You have the people I call them normies. you know, you got the normies and then you got all of us who just are absolutely just head over heels for space wizards.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I love it. And that was a big thing. Like I knew there was a lot of people who were into it and as into it as I was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was kind of interacting with people, but until I actually went to Celebration and saw it in real life, it like put a whole other level of just reality to it. We're like, wow, there are other people who are just as like obsessed with if Anakin and Grievous actually saw each other in the Clone Wars cartoon, because they acted like they didn't meet each other in Revenge of the Sith, you know? And right, like, here we are, we're all like, that's right, yeah, equally important to all of us. It's like, yes, I have to know this.
Well, and you know, it's funny, I think, because one of the things that I wanted to be careful that we didn't dig too much into, but we'll probably hit on it because it's part of Star Wars fandom right now, is and maybe if we hit on it early, we won't say it a lot. But when you talk about some of the negativity, and I think what might be part of the challenge is it comes from people who use this as their most passionate outlet. And
right.
And so it becomes this place to know, I am firmly disagreeing with you. And I'm not talking about fandom menace and people who get ugly and stupid, but I am talking about people who really like these weird sort of arguments and these things that happen. And I think because this right. is where, this is the place where I can't argue with my best friend since fourth grade about, you know, well, you know, what does a purple lightsaber really mean? He doesn't care. But you and I could probably talk about, other than the fact that, you know, so how do we make that canon now that Mace Windu wanted a purple lightsaber and talked George Lucas into it? You know,
so, right.
But those are conversations you and I might care about, but the average people don't. But I think that's also maybe where that at times negativity, and I don't want to call it hostility, but you know, that sort of aggression perhaps might be a word.
Right. Yeah, I don't know, and I. Star Wars, and we always talk about this, like all of us on our podcast, you know, Star Wars has always been like a place where people are kind of like they have very strong opinions. And yep. I mean, that just comes with the territory of fandom, but it has been like in the DNA of Star Wars almost, at least since, I don't know, maybe I feel like since the beginning. And again, I think I was born in 87, and so I just missed being around for like the originals and stuff, and I wish I could have been there, but I have a little bit of time on Scotty, my partner in crime, and I remember like the 90s and stuff until I got like into high school, and really honestly like out like working a job at a movie theater with, you know, the projectionists are all nerds and we're all nerds, and we you know, we're there because we want to watch movies and we love movies and we really love science fiction and Star Wars. And you know, you don't really hear the negativity until you get around maybe a bunch of people who are a little salty. And so, but I don't know, like I know I can be salty and stuff, but well, you know, Pete, from listening to our show and talking with me and stuff, I tend to, be more favorable towards a lot of things that the majority of people agree is horrible in Star Wars.
Well, I mean, the very fact that you are the Bombad cast and you are all you're rooted in Jar Jar Binks, at least in the sort of start of your, I mean, you use his image in a lot of right. your promotion and stuff, and I don't think anybody would disagree that of all the characters in Star Wars, he is one of the most maligned, but. You, now, is it, I have to ask, is it a love of Jar Jar because you've always thought he was great, or because he's just sort of outside the lines and you think it's something that you, as a personality, is something that you like because he's outside the lines?
I think it's a little of both. You see, like when I was a kid and I watched these movies, I never had a problem with Jar Jar.
Right. Well, you were 12 when Attack right. of the Clones, or when Phantom Menace came out. So
yeah, I was like, I was right in that George sweet spot, you know, when like, yep. and I loved like, man, ever since the Disney acquisition, I have watched Celebration's live stream like every year. I do what Joseph Scrimshaw at Force Center calls CouchCon.
Yep.
Like every year. So I haven't missed one in spirit. I watch as many of the live streams as I could.
Right.
I justify it. You know, my wife's like, you know, she's like, man, that's your Super Bowl. You know, like you're good.
Really,
like
is, yeah.
you could just be like super. And, but I always thought that he was fine. And I never had hard feelings towards Jar Jar. And I remember like getting older and like, you know, having my friends be like, oh, that he's stupid, he's dumb. And I was like, well, and I can see, you know, they kind of diminished him in every movie a little bit, you know, George didn't really get to continue with that. But I was in that George Lucas sweet spot of, I made this for 12-year-olds. And I was like, this is Star Wars. It feels Star Wars. I've said on a lot of podcasts and online and stuff, made it, you know, available. Phantom Menace is my favorite, actually, of the prequels. Not my favorite movie of all of them. But yeah. But when we were thinking of names, we were thinking of stuff, we wanted to have like a spirit of fun and positivity, and also like, man, we don't care. Like, right. we are gonna just kind of embody this. And it just popped into my head one day, and I text Scotty, and we were both like, oh my gosh, the Bombad cast. There's no other, like, and we just lucked out that apparently no one wants to have a Jar Jar themed podcast. So not many people. There's also the Hey Blabber podcast, a shout out to him and stuff. Yep. But, this was like, we were like, oh man, this is a great opportunity. We should take this. And so we just kind of ran with it. And I mean, Jar Jar has just kind of become our spirit animal, man. We love him. And again, I don't think either one of Scotty was, I think he said, and this is going to make both of us feel old, Pete. I think he was six when Phantom Menace came out. And, you know, like, there's a certain point where like people were just like that, you know, Jar Jar's just a part of it, man. Like, you know, he's funny and he's there for what he's there for. I love how people are more on the train now of like, he's a pure heart and stuff, you know, kind of a pure hearted character. But, no, man, the genesis of the name is just that, like, we were like trying to think of a fun name, like, we wanted to be thoughtful and, poignant and all that, but also like have fun and be positive. And Bombad Cast, just like, it just stuck. And I mean, from then on, like, we shot off with everything, our Stay Bombad catchphrase. Yep. People started calling us the Bombad Boys and all that stuff. Like, it's, and we have like our Bombad fam group and all that. It's just, it's really kind of been like a blessing that we really even thought of that. And so, and you Google the Bombad cast and it's, I mean, there's nothing else. No one else really tags onto that. So
that's cool. So let's maybe talk about Jar Jar for a second, because I think that's one topic that I haven't really covered too much on my show. I think I mentioned when I was on with you guys, when we did that really fun, you guys did, and I recommend it for everybody, go check out the countdown to the Rise of Skywalker. You guys did multi-hour episodes on every single movie, and you went really deep, and I need to commend you for the research you did and things like that. And I appreciate you having me on Phantom Menace, because I, you know, Phantom Menace for me, it's interesting, because as we talk about Jar Jar, I was definitely in the anti Jar Jar camp for quite a while.
Right.
But now as I look at him, I feel like he's just part of Star Wars, and he is, he's goofy and all that, but he's a Star Wars character. The story I think I might have told on your show, that I'm not sure that I've told on this one, was when I went to the New York premiere of Phantom Menace, one of my most vivid memories is of Ahmed Best. And him walking, while we were walking into the after party, and the press was there, and you know what? Nobody interviewed me. I'm still shocked that nobody stopped me on the red carpet and wanted to talk to me. But I'll get over that. But
you're the P. Fletcher.
They didn't know. But interestingly, not too many people stopped Ahmed Best, because nobody knew who he was.
Right.
And it's, you know, I had seen the movie because we were on our way after to the after party. And I had my misgivings about Jar Jar. But I remember Ahmed Best on the carpet there, and nobody was talking to him. And the few people who did, you could just tell he was so proud and excited to have been part of Star Wars. And then to watch sort of his heart get stomped on over the next 20 years, that was kind of sad to me, because I think, much like even Jake Lloyd, people blame him. And at the end of the day, I think, and I should let you talk, but I think the amazing thing about Jar Jar is that he was really the first CGI character. Without him, you don't get Dobby, and you don't get that Lord of the Rings. You don't get
Gollum, Sméagol. Yeah,
you don't get it, and you don't get K2SO and all those things. I think he's completely underappreciated.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. Like, I'm with that, and we are big. Like Gungan apologists for sure. Like again, he's not our, and maybe this is bad for our brand to like actually admit this, but like, he's not like our ultimate favorite character of all time.
Right.
But he's become just kind of like this symbol for us and stuff. But we're all for like Jar Jar redemption and stuff. Like whenever the news came out about like, you know, Jar Jar, bearded Jar Jar showing up in Kenobi.
Right.
We were like, oh heck yeah. Cause I'm like, I don't think people are going to get over it until they, and pardon me, but until they grow a pair and put a Gungan in a freaking movie or show or something again, man, outside of the context of the Phantom Menace and stuff, because you're just like hiding it away and stuff. And I feel like if they just, and it could just be me, but I feel like if you brought something out, like there was a character in, I think, Daniel Jose Older's last shot novel with Han and Lando, that was a Gungan that worked on a prison planet, and they like start talking to him like Misa, Wisa, Husa, Usa. Yeah. And he's like, I don't talk like that. And I really am offended. And I'm like, do that.
Yeah.
Because that is like, that's real. That's real life, man. I mean, I know this is a galaxy far, far away. We go there to escape. But I want to see that. Give me a Gungan bounty hunter that's like missing an eye stalk.
Yeah.
Or like one of the big burly boss Nass like Gungans and looking Gungans, you know, like a intimidating something or other, you know. And I don't know, I think it could really work and stuff, and it could really do wonders for that. But what you were saying, Pete, about just the spirit of Ahmed Best, which I mean, the jokey, funny, you know, clumsy side of Jar Jar aside, that's his heart in that character. Yep. The heart of Jar Jar is Ahmed Best.
Yep.
And just like you said, like I was too young to really see it happen in real time, but to, you know, he had that post a couple years ago about going to the spot where he almost committed suicide with his son.
Right.
And just that, again, I had no ill will towards him before that, but to see that was a result of people being quote unquote too passionate.
Right.
About something, which that's the dark side of things. That's the passion you shouldn't give into.
Yeah.
Not that you shouldn't have opinions on characters, and you shouldn't be able to say like, I really didn't think that was a very good character. I didn't really like what they did with it. There's a difference in that and like telling someone that like they suck, they should die, they should, you know, like,
right.
And I mean, I don't know how true this is, but like Jake Lloyd too, you mentioned.
Yeah.
9 years old, I believe, when he filmed the movie, or maybe 10, getting like hate mail or something from grown men,
right?
Grown, like freaking men sending a child a letter about how he ruined Star Wars for them. Yeah. I'm sorry. Go upstairs from your mom's basement, make some pizza rolls. I don't like to get into the blanket stuff. Why aren't you like, you're going to probably, you know, get crushed by a pile of newspapers you've been hoarding for like 50 years. You know, that's going to be your end and stuff. I'm going to be the Luke Skywalker over your shoulder, like haunting you, you know, like, I don't know, like
it's interesting because it is bringing that obsessive kind of behavior or that obsessive sort of thinking to it. And it's again, too, you know, one of the things that has dawned on me, especially as I sort of evaluate in my mind, Rise of Skywalker. And like, I've been fairly open about, you know, it's right in the middle, right? It's not my Empire Strikes Back. It's not my Attack of the Clones. It's
right
somewhere in the middle. And once I kind of realized and started to remember that Star Wars is more about the story than the way the story's told sometimes. And what I mean by that is, an application to Jar Jar Binks, there was a need for that type of character, and it was executed in the way that George felt made the most sense for the story he wanted to tell to, you know, 12-year-old Jerry, canon junkie.
Right.
And it worked for you. I mean, I've you know, my daughter loves Jar Jar Binks. She's 10 years old. She thinks he's great.
Right.
And so that works. But if you step back, like when I did that crazy fan fiction thing that I did, and I looked at Jar Jar as kind of almost a sort of like Lenny from Of Mice and Men.
Yeah. Kind of
sympathetic, you know, not really in control of everything. But you need that character in the story. You need that character to drive the story forward. And whether you like the execution or not, you still like what the story is about, I think is what
I'm talking about. No, absolutely. And that's, you know, I know that's everyone's biggest criticism with the prequels is the story's great. It's just the execution and stuff, which I mean, I can get behind that with a lot of stuff on there and all that. But yeah, no, you're 100% right. And that was, I feel like that was George's like inspiration, at least for the heart of Jar Jar, you know, right. Was that like, it's this character with a pure heart who is kind of almost the good-hearted person who like the world puts down,
right,
and stuff. And just how does a Jedi like, I mean, that's the lessons he was trying to teach 12-year-olds how are you going to treat people who were like kind of out in the fringes of society, who are good-hearted people who no one wants to give the time of day,
right?
You know, it's like, you have no idea what people have to offer and stuff. And we, you know, it's about not writing people off. It's about, you know, showing compassion to every living thing, because everyone, you know, every living thing, every living creature deserves compassion, deserves respect, you know, respect until like you send a letter to a 10-year-old boy telling him like how bad like he ruined your childhood. But I don't know. And there you go. Like, you know, me and Scotty love to get on our soapboxes and stuff. So, but, yeah, man, no, you're 100% right. Like, I think that was exactly that. And then George was also doing an homage to, Charlie Chaplin and those kind of like, you know, physical, like comedic performers of the silent film era, which he, and also Goofy, which is, my daughter, I think that's what my daughter, really appreciates about Jar Jar. Cause she's also a Jar Jar fan and stuff. So
yeah, the videos you post to your daughter are absolutely adorable. It's great.
So she's been saying that for like all weekend and even into now, it makes me so happy. So,
but you know, you bring up an interesting point. And I think that's the role that Jar Jar played, because I that was to me one of the themes of A New Hope that I think people often forget about. It's sort of nature and natural world against hello Kitty.
I was gonna warn you before we started that my cat usually makes an appearance in every Bombad Cast. Jack makes an appearance in every Bombad Cast episode, and he actually just made an appearance in another ASMR funny weird video, and he's 100% in that. And so he makes his cameo, he takes his time, and I give him his royalties, you know. So
excellent. Well, the cat is benefiting from Bob.
Yeah.
But where I was going was, you know, at the end, A New Hope is a very overtly but often forgotten about illustration of nature and spirit versus technology. Right. And that's kind of that thing. And then in Phantom Menace, George, you know, literally hit us over the head by having Obi-Wan say, you know, you must recognize that you're part of a symbiont circle, and sort of said, oh, okay, let's be very, and that's the role that Jar Jar plays. And I think, you know, honestly, maybe that's one of the things missing from the sequels is that not missing from it. It's a different message. I think the sequels is a family message versus a family and friends message versus a nature versus technology kind of message.
Right.
So I'm not sure where that rambling is headed, but that.
Hey man, I'm feeling right at home, because that's all me and Scotty do is ramble. So,
so what about? Did you read Aftermath and the Chuck Wendig model novels and pick up the revisiting of Jar Jar, and how'd you react to that?
Yes. Well, I believe I'm like you, Pete. You're an audiobook guy, right? Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. Mark Thompson's my guy, man. I don't know if you.
Oh, he's amazing.
I was like, I haven't missed an episode. Did you do an episode with him already?
I have not. You know, it's I had talked to him at New York Comic Con. It was just a thrill to meet him, and then spoke to his publicist, and unfortunately, he got a little bit backed up, probably doing all these novels that are out now. But yeah.
They're basically giving him like half of them. And,
he's becoming the voice of Star Wars novels.
Yeah, man. No, I love Mark. Anyway, shout out. Hey, Mark, if you're listening, buddy, I love you. Yes, I have. And I, like I said, I'm an audiobook guy because it's like just listening to, you can see the movie in your head. They have the sound effects and everything. I'm a factory worker, currently my day job. And so, you know, I can have headphones in. And so it's 8 to 12 hours a day.
Yeah.
If I got a new audiobook, man, it's smooth sailing. But no, dude, as soon as those came out, like each one of those, I ate it up in like 2 days.
Yeah.
I think at my job. And so, but I think, you know, you're getting at the interludes and stuff, right? Yep. Maybe towards the end of it. I think that was in... Here I am, the canon junkie. Hold on. I believe it was in Empire's End, the last one. Mm-hmm. Because I remember the interludes kind of started out like everyone was like, what are these? Like they have nothing to do with anything.
Right.
And there was one in the first novel that was like setting up basically the second novel with Han Solo and Chewbacca.
Yep.
But I love those things. I love those things. And I think what he wrote for Jar Jar is, I'll share my hot take. I think, and I don't think it really is a hot take. I don't know why people, I feel like a lot of people misinterpret that story to be like, oh, how sad and pathetic that Jar Jar ended up like in this horrible place. And I'm not saying it's not sad, but, and I don't know how you feel about it and stuff, but to me, if I'm remembering correctly, like there's this like refugee boy who's been badly disfigured or something, and like it's after the war and stuff, and they're sending these refugee kids who like have lost their parents, these orphans, with different families. Like they're pairing them up with families, and no one wants this kid who's disfigured, and he's kind of sitting by himself by a fountain. Again, if you guys haven't heard this, but and then all of a sudden this Gungan comes up and it's Jar Jar, and it kind of like talks about how he'd been disgraced ever since. Because what I thought was cool about this new Disney area is that they take things from the prequels that people were like, why did they do that?
Yeah.
And they made it relevant, and they made it like, they almost took like meta stuff from real life.
Yeah.
And like everyone now hates Jar Jar because he kind of like, you know, gave the emperor his power.
Yep.
And just to see that Jar Jar is on hard times, which is, I feel like, what everyone focuses on, but he's the only one who's going to give, like, he knows what it's like to be on the outside, and he goes and just gives this kid the companionship, the friendship, the love that he needs, and is, you know, just compassionate when no one else is and stuff. To me, it was a beautiful ending. Yeah, it was almost like people call him like a sad clown and stuff, but I don't know. I think it's misinterpreting a little bit to be like, oh, that, what a pathetic ending. And it's like, no, he's doing what we should all be doing, and not looking at the outside appearance and what people think, you know, and just, yeah, I don't know, showing compassion. I get very passionate about that.
So. Well, no, but I feel like it's you and I think are on the same page in that it was a nice illustration of the heart, which again, we talked about it, whether it was Ahmed Best or the character itself, but there was a heart there. And in a way, to your point, and I like the way you're talking about it, because it is sort of a meta sort of self-awareness that, you know, this character is blamed for, whether it's in universe bringing the emperor to power, or in our world blamed for making these movies childish and silly. Either way, he's moved on, and he's still who he is, and and he hasn't grown. He hasn't grown past through that heart that he has.
Right.
He's still who he is, and you know, and he. I think when you get to Wendig's book, it's almost like, I don't know if I would go this far, but he's come to terms with it, and we as the reader, you know, and maybe it's easier to take too because you're not seeing it on screen. You're able to apply what the character means versus what the visual interpretation is, which sort of is where I was going before about, you know, the spirit was there, but the execution was, you know, arguable. And
right.
Now, I'd love to get your perspective on this, because to me, the prequels have aged remarkably well to me, not visually, but story-wise, how, especially when you guys went through the rewatches, how have the prequels struck you?
Well, it's funny you say the thing about how they haven't aged like visually very well, because it was exactly when we were doing the Bombad buildup that up until that point, I was like, these still look pretty good. They don't look too bad. Mm-hmm. And it's like we hit that technology wall that you hit with every old movie where it's like it starts to look like,
it looked great at the time, but
It's like that looks like a PlayStation 2 like era game or something. Like, what is going on here? And again, you know, like it's the top of its game and stuff, but it's funny, like we were both commenting, me and Scotty, about how like, oh wow, we hit the wall. We hit the wall hard. But I think we were like surprised with how much we were able to squeeze. And you were on our Phantom Menace episode, Pete. And I mean, there was so much to get out of these films. I think the one we had the hardest time with was Attack of the Clones. Mm-hmm. But there's still so much in it and stuff, you know. And my humblest condolences to Alice and Laura Forstos for sticking that out through sticking through that with us. So thank you ladies for doing that. But I was really struck with like kind of the little notes you pick up and stuff, and I think we really focused on kind of almost like the Palpatine thread.
Yep.
Like, what is this dude kind of up to and stuff, and what is like the Scotty noticed something really cool. He noticed that whole thing about like how there's like a theme with the Skywalkers and the Force and like fire, mm-hmm. and like fire representing like change and maybe either growth, rebirth, or depending on when it was, death. Mm. Case in point, you know, Qui-Gon's funeral at the beginning is a signal of a change.
Yep.
Or in Phantom Menace, at the end of Phantom Menace. And then you have Anakin burning alive on the shores of Mustafar, signaling like the death of his innocence, the death of his good. And it just kind of continues through the whole thing. I'm trying to remember if we got anything in Rise of Skywalker, flamey. The Falcon was on fire.
The Falcon was on fire, but you also had Rey destroying Ren's TIE fighter after she saved his life. And
right. So, that was a funeral pyre of sorts.
Yep.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. See, it still holds up. There you go. Yeah. Go check out my boy, Scotty. He knows his stuff. So.
Yeah. But it's interesting to see the connections and where they, the series goes back to them. And I guess what you and I think we talked about it when I was on your show as well, but as we were talking just a moment ago about the prequels have aged well because of the stories that we've gotten since. I believe.
Right.
I think, I don't know that we would have loved them. Well, we would have loved them because they're Star Wars. If all we had, if we just had 9 movies, right? Let's take out all the two, what do they call them? The
standalones, I think. Now they were going to be anthology films for a little bit,
right? So, that was the word.
And then we felt really artsy. We were like, "That's too artsy for Star Wars. We got to take it back a notch."
But if we just had the 9 movies, I think the prequels would work. But I think because of things like Clone Wars and because of things like the novels and the comics, as fans,
right.
and maybe that's why. And I'm just having this thought as we're talking. Maybe that's why my sort of the normies, as you call them, and I'm going to steal the phrase.
lovingly.
Maybe that's why they can't get past the prequels. Right.
Yeah.
My friends are still like, Phantom Menace. That was the worst movie I ever saw. And
right.
I'm like, no, but there's so much going on there. It means so much. It's so important to the story. Are you a big Clone Wars watcher as well?
Oh, yes. I think I've watched through every season of the Clone Wars once a year. I've done like a chronological canon rewatch pretty much right. every year since the new movies have come out, but also since like the Clone Wars has been on Netflix and I figured out how to do the chronological rewatch.
Right.
It's just like something I do, but like, yeah, I seriously, like with every one of these movies, even before I did a podcast on the Boba Fett buildup and whatever have you, I was like, I was watching 1 and 2, then the Clone Wars in order, and then whatever, you know? And so now that the Skywalker saga is complete for now, I'm excited to kind of do a super massive rewatch. But I know I love the Clone Wars, man. I'm so excited for it coming back.
I love that concept. I think once Clone Wars season 7 is over, maybe while we have some time, I'll do that. Like you just called the super massive, go like 1, 2 Clone Wars.
Yeah.
3. And then what would be after 3? Would you go
After 3, it would be solo. I've done this before. You can tell.
Okay, yeah.
After 3, it would be Solo.
Right.
Then all of Rebels. Then,
Rogue One,
and you guys get the rest.
So, but then you have to add 4, 5, 6, and then Mandalorian.
Oh yeah, I almost forgot. Yeah, well, and Resistance too.
And Resistance.
So you watch Mandalorian season 1, which we don't have that story complete yet.
Right.
But I think it's going to be. I mean, the I don't know if we can do spoilers and stuff for your listeners and stuff, but you know, that last episode, the Darksaber's in it, so it's got a little bit more to do with at least kind of the extra canon stuff, like Clone Wars and all that. Like the Darksaber's played a big part in almost every show except for Resistance. So
yep, that's true. That's true. And it was so cool to see it come back. So with all the stuff that we, you know, it's funny, when I started the show almost a year ago, when I'd ask people what they're looking forward to, we had like a menu. We knew there was things coming. Now all we know is that there's stuff coming, but the only thing we know for sure is Mando season 2. So what do you want to see moving forward from Star Wars? And you know, I'm sure Mando season 2 is high on your list, but what does Star Wars need to do next, in your opinion?
Oh man. I just do George Lucas impressions. I don't like claim to be him, but or if I had my way, Saga. No, dude, this is hard for me because you know me, like I said at the beginning here. And like, if you guys who listen to the Bombadcast or follow me on Twitter, you know, like I dig most of what we've gotten. And, I've always kind of been that person. I always say, ever since Rogue One came out, I'm the Shirut Imwe of the Star Wars fan, and where I'm like, I'm one with the Force is with me. Whatever they give to me is going to be what the Force wills and stuff. Right. And so
I think that's fair.
But I don't know if I really just kind of like got down to it and thought about it, I think I really want, honestly, I'm really excited for them to continue. Like, I know there's just kind of been rumblings. Kathleen Kennedy has said, I think, right, that they want to continue the stories of Rey, Finn, and Poe, correct?
She's alluded to it, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I kind of want to keep going with them. Yeah. Not even in, like, it doesn't have to be like a new, like, new saga films, but I just want to see those characters continue. Like, I want to see where we go from here.
Yeah,
because we're at like a unique point in Star Wars where, you know, with Luke, Han, and Leia, I don't know, back then they I guess they didn't want to do like a cartoon show or something, or you know, a TV show. They felt like they probably couldn't do it justice on TV back in the 80s.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
just to continue the story with them, I think is what I'm the most excited for. And I'm honestly, no apologies. The time since Last Jedi has been released and now has taught me that I don't really care what people think, and I want more Rian Johnson Star Wars because I don't know. I think he's still 100% on board. I think it's still happening. I don't think there's like they're going to silently push him off.
Right.
And I know you really like Last Jedi too. That's I think it's still my second favorite. It edges ever closer to first, like every time I watch it. But yeah, man, I give that man one of those movies, and I don't know. I'm excited for the New Republic stuff. I want to see like or the Old Republic. I want to see kind of a different era too. Yeah. But. I don't know, man. I want it all. Just give me what you got. Give me your best shot. Give me your best shot, Kathy. And you know, whoever, like give me your best shot.
It's interesting. Cause I always think like when I heard about Rogue One, I was like, eh,
right.
That'll be cool. I guess. I mean, I'm excited cause it'll say Star Wars and I'm a big,
right.
I love everything. And then I saw it. I was like, wow, that was better than I expected.
Yeah.
And then Solo, A Star Wars Story. I was like, I get it. It'll be fun. It'll be cool. And then I saw it. I was like, right. Wow, that was great. And honestly, if I'm being completely honest, Rebels did not strike me well the first 20 minutes of it. I was like, eh.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, I think Rebels is some of the best Star Wars we've ever gotten.
I'd agree with that 100%.
If I'm honest, I think Resistance was good, but it's like the comic books to me. I'm not a big comic book fan, and not just it's just never been my thing. I mean, I got in the comics
right.
In the 90s and they weren't Star Wars comics. It's just not my place where I want to get stories, but I kind of felt like Resistance was very comic book-y. But to your point, yeah, whatever they give us, whatever they decide, I'm sure, you know, if they say we're going to High Republic, I'll be like, yeah, and then we'll see it. We'll be like, wow, that was great. Same thing
with Kenobi.
You know, so it... And I think that's kind of the difference between, you know, we started the top of the show talking about, you know, sort of the intensity of the fans. And I think,
right.
You know, it comes from a place of passion that we're like apprehensive and cautiously optimistic and then inevitably blown away. So,
yeah,
I think that works out. That works out pretty well. So I'm going to take you into the 10 question segment of the show.
Ooh.
If you're ready, I know you listen to the show sometimes.
Man, this is like, I can't believe I'm here. I'd like to thank, first of all, God. I'm gonna go Michael Scott on you or something to do like an acceptance speech. So,
well, hey, feel free to answer these questions however you like, and we'll just take them from the top. Number one, of course, is what is your favorite Star Wars movie, TV show, or book?
Movie, TV show, or book. Well, there's my cats. I don't know if you got that. Pick that up or something. Yeah, he's still here. Jack is 100% with me a lot of the time. So, you know, Jack, I don't know if anyone really likes the Ewok movies anymore. So sorry, buddy. No, I'm just kidding. Dude, it changes for me so much. I lean towards like wanting to say like one of the movies. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I know a lot of people are kind of like, you know, it depends on what I'm watching at the time or something, you know, which is a very cop-outy answer, I know. Right. But usually I say my favorite film is Empire.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something about today or like the last week or whatever, just something, there's something in the air tonight, Pete. I don't know what it is. I feel like I want to say Last Jedi.
That's
just
right.
Just because that was, and I think this was a lot of people's perspective. If you weren't able to see The Empire Strikes Back in theaters at an age where you could comprehend it.
Right.
This was the first time I went to watch a brand new Star Wars movie in theaters that I had absolutely no clue what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. Had no idea where it was going to go. And not from like a, well, that doesn't make a, I know, you know, like, I try to like stop myself. Sometimes I slip into the saltiness of people who don't like TLJ and stuff. Like, cause we fought those, I have like PTSD from the anti-TLJ era, but I wake up in the middle of the night, screaming that bombs can fall in space. But anyway, now I sleep on the couch most of the time. No, anyway, there's just something about Last Jedi that everyone's biggest criticism of it was it didn't feel like Star Wars. But to me, it felt like it was a dissection of what Star Wars was really about, like the heart of Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Followed by a firm, hearty, just giant like affirmation of, yes, Star Wars is everything you've ever thought it was. Mm. It's about heroes. It's about believing. It's about hope, which is a big word in the Disney era is hope, yeah. Hope, hope, hope.
Yep.
But it is, it's about hope. I mean, and I think Last Jedi has just so much in it. It's just, it's intriguing. I had no idea where it was going. I was on the edge of my seat when, spoilers for, you know, 2017 Last Jedi. I know, you know, if you're not yelling about it yet, you will be. When Snoke got, when Kylo just immediately kills Snoke.
Yep.
Was a, an unabashed brilliant choice in my book. Mm. And not because like, that's what, not what we were expecting, but also because we weren't expecting it. Yeah. And what an interesting direction to take that story, you know?
Yeah.
And I just, I don't know. The Last Jedi, just for some reason right now, man, I'll always love Empire. I always say like I'm vanilla, like Empire's usually what I say is my favorite,
right.
But I'm really feeling Last Jedi right now, man.
Yeah. You know, I think the thing with Last Jedi, and I think I've referred to it this way before, and that is, the thing that makes Last Jedi a different film to ingest is that it's unlike any of the other films. It doesn't feel like it has galactic implications, it has very personal implications.
Yeah.
Or yeah, of course it's the potential end of the resistance and that sort of thing. But you never feel that weight. You're feeling the weight of Rey and Kylo and Luke.
Right.
So you feel that personal story, and that's very different from everything. The prequels are at this grand scale, you know, high politics.
I mean, it's even like what's going on in like the Senate building, you know, they go deep.
Yep. And then you get into the original trilogy, which is, you know, definitely, hey, it's the rebellion versus the evil galactic empire. We get that. Last Jedi, really, it's a very, the way I've put it before, it's a very small movie in a very big universe. And I think people who want to go for, that's why I think people who didn't like Last Jedi loved Rise of Skywalker, because Rise of Skywalker was everything you wanted. It was lightsaber battles. It was ships. It was action adventure. It was stormtroopers. It was, you know, it was all that. And it was great. And it was fun, but it was a very different movie. And I can see, you know, I can definitely understand where it can, you know, sort of float along your top 10 and at any position, really, depending on the mood. So,
right. Yeah.
All right, cool. So what is your least favorite Star Wars movie, TV show, or book?
Okay. Let me see. Movie, TV show, or book. This is a hard question because there's so much, Pete. There's so much, man. Yeah, oh man. I just always go right back to the films again. You know, I gave myself the moniker Canon Junkie. it wasn't like thrusted upon me, or I didn't accept the mantle from anybody else. But there's something about like when I'm thinking about like the extra canon material. Mm-hmm. If I don't like something, or if I'm like, I haven't really ever like not liked something, I might've thought something is meh. But when I think of the films, that's where it's like, this is the big time.
Right.
And like, not like you need to impress me or else, but,
it's a bigger,
I think
stage.
No, Jack, not that one. I really think that my least favorite is Attack of the Clones. And I love it. There's a lot of good stuff in it. I love all of that. That's funny. It's funny, like what you have to say in order to not have people yell at you. Right. But it's not that I hate it. I loathe it entirely. I'm starting my own militant fan group to, we're the I can't think of a clever name. So, you know, like they really cornered the market with that. But Attack of the Clones has a lot of cool world building when you watch it again.
Yep.
When you're like on the other side of it, you've already watched it and stuff, and you haven't watched it in a while. You're kind of just like, what am I going to watch today? It's hardly ever. And I've had it happen where I have been like, I think I want to watch Attack of the Clones, but I've never heard anyone be like, you know what I really feel like doing? Attack of the Clones. I want to watch Attack of the Clones right now. Which maybe I'm sorry, Alice of Force Toast. I know that's her favorite and stuff.
That's her favorite. Yeah.
I'm not trying to knock your preferences there, Alice. But no, man. Like it's the bread and butter like cookie cutter answers. I feel like for Star Wars fans, like, oh, my favorite's Empire. My least favorite is Attack of the Clones. But I think it's just that it's maybe the least amount I feel like happens, which is crazy because the Clone Wars start in that movie. But right. I don't know. I think really as positive as I am about like the special editions and the prequels and all that, the love dialogue is very hard to swallow in Attack of the Clones.
Yeah. And I would offer that it is probably the most CGI heavy of all the films, and the CGI doesn't hold up. I mean, you want to talk about, you know, PlayStation 2 graphics, you have all the clones. There's nothing.
The clones, man. Yeah.
I mean, think about it. They
made like season 2 of Clone Wars.
I mean, those clones look better sometimes. Right. So you have, and they made an entire Star Wars movie with clone troopers and didn't have one practical set of armor on set.
Yeah, that blows my mind. Like at the time, you're like, again, I think I was in junior high at that time, and I was like, oh, this is great, you know, like look at all those guys, that's awesome. But yeah, like you said, it's almost a shame, and I'm glad that the 501st and other people, like other fan groups, that were like, no, we're gonna build these armor kits and stuff.
I totally agree with that. So, all right, cool. So I won't make you defend your Attack of the Clones.
That's okay. If I may, real quick, though, one thing that makes the love, the dialogue between Anakin and Padme in those like really awkward scenes where they're in front of the fire is if you imagine George Lucas saying those exact things in his voice. I don't know if it makes it. It might make you feel uncomfortable, but like I
want to hear you say it.
Okay.
I'm haunted by the kiss that you never should have given me, and I truly, deeply, madly. Did I say madly? I can't remember if I wrote that down. I love you.
For me, I can't help but think that. I think I had that realization during the Bob Ed buildup, but
it's true.
There you go, guys. There's a pro tip.
Listen to it as George Lucas, and you'll be able to pull yourself through.
At least laugh. Yeah.
Yeah. You'll chuckle through it. Would you consider yourself Imperial or Rebel?
Rebel all the way. And it's funny, whenever me and Allison, my lovely wife, we first got married. Mm-hmm. Her brother liked Star Wars. Like she had that's my little brother's thing. I don't want to get into it, but she watched through all the movies with me. Uh-huh. And she's like, Darth Vader's her. I mean, she's not she's still a casual fan, but she was like all in for Darth Vader, mm-hmm. like painted like some. My wife paints and stuff. She like and makes like little clay sculptures, and she's very artistic. Her family is, and made like all kinds of Darth Vader stuff and all that. And but I'm a dyed in the wool, just like. Rebel soldier and stuff, you know, like I'm rebel soldier. I lean towards that like ragtag rebellion, and that's just like, I mean the Imperials have really cool toys and stuff, but I've always loved that like more, you know, I feel like the Rebels and the Resistance have more fun, you know what I mean? Like You can't really, like, there, people are like, oh man, you know, the Empire is way cool and their costumes are cool. But I'm like, but it's a totalitarian government, man. Like, you, if you like so much as look at your superior officer the wrong way, you're going to get like, probably like shut out an airlock. So, I just have always, and again, like I was talking about earlier, you know, like, you know, they're the ones that show compassion to people. And that really like touched my heart and stuff to if I may get a little serious, which I don't do often, but, yeah, I don't know. I've always been just like really partial to the Rebel Alliance, and, I like the Starbird better than the Imperial Cog. I'm sorry. The Starbird all the way, man.
That's awesome. That's great. Yeah. That's, I've always wanted to own a set of Stormtrooper armor, but, I think I'd rather be on the side of the right choice.
So. Right. Well, and I've wanted to own Stormtrooper armor too, but to see the Rebels cheat, they get to wear that like all the time. Every single Rebel, like their big game plan is always like, oh, it's still their armor and they won't think twice.
See, that's why I could never be in 501st. Cause I would dress up as Stormtrooper, stolen by Rebel, and I wouldn't wear my helmet.
You're like, I'm cheating. Yeah. I know.
All right. So what is your favorite Star Wars sound effect?
Oh man. Well, if you guys have watched, by the time this airs, if you've watched either one of our ASMR videos on the Bombadcast feed, you know, like I have fun like making those sound effects and stuff. There's a lot of really cool ones. I have to think, just because whenever I got a Bose home theater system for free from my wife's grandpa, who was like, hey, I got this new, like, whatever, how much system, and you want this one? And I was like, yes, before you give it to anyone else, 100% I'll take that. One of the first things I did was I went to Attack of the Clones, which is, again, my least favorite.
Right, you hate
I went
that.
Right, you know where I'm going. I went right to that chase sequence in the Geonosis asteroid belt with Kenobi and Jango and Boba. And man, I wanted to listen to see if it sounded just like it did in the theater, that seismic charge. Yep. Almost like the Holdo maneuver was in Last Jedi just now. I like those kind of sound effects, I guess. Yeah. But like that, the sound almost cuts out, mm-hmm. and there's this huge thing, and then all of a sudden, it just a ginormous, you know. Yep. And man, there's something about that sound effect that was just so cool. Sitting in the theater, being a preteen.
Yep.
All the sound effects in Star Wars are cool. Like the lightsaber ignitions, there's certain ones that are really cool. I know my buddies, I'm good buddies with David and Timothy of As Father and Son. I know I listened to their episode a couple weeks ago. I think it was Timothy, right, who said that his favorite is like specifically what, like Luke's lightsaber or something?
Yeah, Luke's green lightsaber.
Yeah.
No, he said, I'm sorry, that was Tom said that when it was, he liked Luke's lightsaber when he ignited it versus Vader in Bespin.
Oh, right. The fast ignition.
From Vader, which I never noticed till he said it. And then I went back and pulled it in so I could put it in the episode. And it's true.
It's so good. So brilliant.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, you're good. You're good. It feels like I'm just talking with Scotty here, man. We do that all the time. But there's just something about that sound effect that really captured my imagination at that age. And again, I was a close to being cynical teenager, and it still like just really blew my mind. I thought it was amazing that, I don't know, Ben Burtt and Matthew Wood, those guys are just gifts, and I'm so glad that we've had their national treasures. And after I listened to Attack of the Clones, that scene, I went to Force Awakens and watched Rey dragging her load of junk I'm blanking on his name again. I'm a great canon junkie. Okay. Unkar Plutt, dragging it to Unkar, and you got that big giant guy with the robot arms walking by. And theater, I remember like how the bass of that was like, I was like, oh wow, that's a big guy. And that was a cool sound effect to me. So I watched that too. So there you go. I'll cheat and give my honorary mention to honorable mention to that.
So. You know, when I so since I was born in 1970, and I remember getting my first I was living at my parents' house in 1988-ish. Well, yeah, that's the year I graduated high school. So it was probably closer to 90 because I was still living at home. And I got a surround sound system. I was working at Radio Shack, and I bought myself a surround sound system. And
nice.
The first sound that I wanted to hear. So in my bedroom at my parents' house, I put a surround sound system. Total
sense. I get it.
The first scene that I played was the probe droids coming out of the Star Destroyer at the beginning of Empire Strikes Back. They fly around your head, and
man,
that's my memory. Your memory of your Bose system jarred that free for me, which is good.
That's awesome. Yeah.
All right. So, which droid do you prefer, R2, 3PO, or BB-8?
Oh. I know that 3PO gets he doesn't get a lot of love on here, but I don't know, man. It's hard not to go with R2.
Yeah.
Again, going back to like the cookie cutter answers. I can't say cookie cutter right now, but. There's something about R2, and Scotty and I just actually recorded an episode about R2-D2, and we were like 20 minutes or 15 minutes into that episode, and I was like, I don't know how we're going to fill this whole episode, and we ended up like going so long, that's typical Bombaycast fashion, but I never really thought about how much I love that little guy and stuff, how much personality he has, and BB-8 almost has just as much personality and just as much heart. Like I love BB-8. We just haven't, I guess, had as much time with him. I don't know, man. Can I pick all three? Because I mean, I want to give 3PO some love, man. I mean, like, I know Anthony Daniels is like, you know, like I am C-3PO, you know, but I love that 3PO is kind of like oblivious. Like you don't have the fun dynamic, and not to get too much into what me and Scotty talk about, but we kind of talk about how without 3PO, him and R2 really just, I mean, you could have other people, I guess, like, dialoguing with R2. You could have had like just Luke or Anakin or whatever, but
right.
3PO is, he really does a lot of comedic like lifting, especially in Rise of Skywalker. He did, I think, his best comedic performance.
I would agree.
Maybe his best performance in all of Star Wars, yeah, too.
I think Rise of Skywalker was the best 3PO film after A New Hope.
It's they gave him so much like meat on the bone.
Yeah.
For Rise of Skywalker. And, but I don't know if I had to like just narrow it down to one, definitely R2.
All right, we'll give you R2 on that one. You're not
okay. Familiar. All right.
All right. So, what spaceship or vehicle from the Star Wars universe would you most like to own?
Man, everyone's inclination again is to say the Millennium Falcon, which I again really want to say because I have like an interesting relationship. I used to, whenever I first started watching Star Wars when I was a kid,
right.
I remember having thoughts of like, wow, that doesn't look very good. Like, like the Falcon looks horrible or not horrible. That's a horrible word. I remember as a kid going like, oh, that looks so old and stuff. And even R2 and 3PO looking like, oh, those look like, you know, 1960s or whatever. Like, I'm like, oh, and again, me and Scotty kind of get into that in our next episode. But, man, I freaking love the Falcon now. And like, every time I see it, and I love that, like, now the Here They Come theme is kind of like the Falcon theme.
Yep.
You know, like that. I love in Last Jedi and Force Awakens. My favorite part probably of the Force Awakens, I don't know, there's a lot. One of my favorite parts is the Falcon, Rey and Finn flying the Falcon on Jakku. Yep. And then in Last Jedi, when Rey comes in to save them on Crate, like the Falcon is a character.
Yep.
But everyone chooses it, and
well, there's a reason for it, I guess. You know, it's,
yeah,
it's probably because it is a character.
It is, and, well, that's the one. And I mean, depending on how you feel about the L337, you know, whole plot point in Solo about her, you know, brain being basically put into the Falcon. I kind of dig it, but I understand why people have problems with it. But I think my gut reaction is that. But again, I'm going to try to be different here. Pete. I'm going to say, I think the ghost from Rebels, because the ghost, honestly, it might be a little more homey than the Falcon. Honestly, yeah.
it's more of an RV on wheels than the Falcon.
Yeah. The way I would describe it, and you guys don't know what vehicles I drive, but the ghost is my wife's minivan.
Okay.
And the Falcon is my filthy, grubby little hatchback car. And that is, you know, there's stuff rolling around everywhere. You got to jump over like a barrel every now and then. And you know, you got piles of clothes and all this kind of stuff. I don't have clothes in my car. But, but you know what I mean? Like, it's just, I don't know, like, the Falcon is awesome. It has character. I love it. Gut reaction, I would choose the Falcon like every day, but I don't know, man, there's something about the ghost that's just kind of like Filoni and them, like whatever, whoever all like came, I don't know who had the genesis of the idea. I feel like it was a bunch of people, but they really created something special when they created another Corellian freighter that is just as lovable, if not almost more than the Falcon.
And the funny thing with that is, you know, similar to what I was saying before about the even the plot of Rebels, when I first saw the ghost, I was like, that's kind of weak. And then I love it. I mean, I have a couple that I have, like the little Micro Machine version of it, and I got a couple.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm with you on the ghost, man. The ghost is a great ship. So
I'm going to get, see, I don't play that West End games or whatever the big tabletop game is, X-Wing, but I so many times have been stuck in a Barnes and Noble, really like having a crisis of conscience of buying the ghost or the Falcon or whatever, because the ghost in that looks so, those models look so good.
The reason I don't do that is because my fear is I'm going to buy it and I'm going to be like, I'll just put it on my desk and then I'll be like, I wonder how this game plays. And then I'm going to, it's going to make my pop collection look like nothing.
Right. Yeah, for sure, man. They have everything in that game now, man. It's crazy. All things.
So, all right, the next question, I know your answer, but I'm going to ask it. It's Porg, Ewoker, Jar Jar Binks, which is your
favorite? Well, you see, man, I have these gut reactions and I have these like answers, like, man, Pete, every episode of your show I listen to, I think about what my things are, so I'm prepared. I've done my homework. But have you had anyone say Jar Jar?
Oh yeah, a couple of people said Jar Jar.
Okay, I was gonna say, can I still host a Star Wars podcast, Jar Jar themed podcast, if I don't say Jar? No, I'm inclined to say Jar Jar just because I don't feel like he gets enough love and stuff. But if I'm going with my gut reaction, I honestly am going to be controversial and say Porg. I feel like.
All right.
So that's fair. Yeah.
Not too just,
I don't. But, I love them, man. My kid loves them. I love them. What's not to love?
They're fluffy. They're cute. And in a pinch, you can eat them.
Yeah. All right. The best pet. No, I'm just kidding.
All right. So if you could be any character in Star Wars, who would you be and why?
Oh, man. Any character. I don't know. Like, I feel like I want to be more of a Jedi. Like, everyone wants to be a Jedi. Mm-hmm. But I think the older I've gotten, and I I lean towards Han. I lean towards Han just because I love the don't care attitude, or not the don't care, the I'm going to act like I'm cool and tough. But deep down, like I really care what you think about me, and I don't want you to get hurt. So I'm going to do my best to take you under my wing and protect you. And just the whole like idea of him being like this, he's a crack shot. He's an amazing pilot, like the best pilot in the galaxy at his time. And still like he oozes cool, but at the same time says the most awkward, stupid things like to Princess Leia, to Carrie, you know, like, I love that. Like, just kind of like, I guess it was a dichotomy of a character where it's like, he's cool as a cucumber to a lot of people, but when it comes down to it, he kind of like fumbles stuff, and he like right. really, he's really human. And I love that. And, since this is my night of honorable mentions, I really loved Luke in Last Jedi. And again, why I lean so far towards that movie, and I guess, you know, defend it so passionately, is because that movie kind of came into my life at a certain time where the way I saw Luke on Octu, on that island, and what he did at the end, really spoke to me, and I really identified with kind of where he was about, like, he was depressed, he was feeling down, he was like having doubts in himself and the Jedi, and that he still comes back to like, you know, no, I can still be what I need to be. I can still do things and not be a perfect. I can still attain that legend status and not be a perfect person. You know what I mean? Like I'm still human. Anyway, I don't know. Sorry. I'm about to, we can start a whole nother podcast on that, man. I'm telling you, I have so many thoughts on Last Jedi and Luke and Last Jedi.
Well, if I do a Last Jedi special episode, I'll definitely give you a call.
Yeah, man. Hit me up. I'm all for it.
All right. So which trilogy is your favorite? Is it the originals, the prequels, or the sequels? I'm not sure what I would guess on you on this one yet.
Again, as all of us probably say, as you know, like you usually say, like a student of Star Wars and stuff, you know, yeah. I feel like it's a constantly changing answer.
Yeah.
For a long time, I would have just said original trilogy. And I think it still is like up there consistently, is like all three of those movies are almost perfect for me.
Right.
But there is something about the sequel trilogy, and again, it could be the fresh eyes we have on it, the newness, mm-hmm. that it's complete now, but it's just now complete. Like it's still in some theaters, you know, and
right.
it's not completed its theatrical run yet.
Yeah.
There's just something about the sequel trilogy that it speaks to me. It touched on things that were, I feel like, still quintessential Star Wars, but were things that Star Wars had never touched on before. Again, going back to Last Jedi, which is my favorite sequel movie, apparently. I love what Ken Knapsack says about that movie, that it was the first Star Wars movie about growing old, about growing up. Mm. Or not growing up, it was about growing old.
Mm. Yep.
And again, I'm about to be 33. I'm not saying I'm like ancient or whatever, or young or whatever, but just the older you get, the more you do think about like kind of life and where you're going and what it means and all that. And it was nice to get, you think about failure, you think about all those things. And it was nice to kind of get like a movie that thought about that. And so, and, I've kind of forgot the question that we were talking about. Like I was going off on a TLJ
tangent. Yeah. Yeah, we were saying favorite trilogy, and you're saying sequels.
I man, the last like month, I think it has been the sequels. I just, the more I think about that whole story, mm-hmm. and the more me and Scotty talk about it on Bombadcast, like I fall in love more and more with those characters and with yep. the stories, and just I love the way that the original trilogy characters were handled in those movies as well. Like I think it's handled with reverence and beauty.
Yep.
And also a dose of this is life, yeah. You know? And again, Star Wars at its core is lessons for 12-year-olds. We want to make sure that they know how to choose good from evil. And to me, that's 100% what the sequel trilogy was, maybe even slightly more to a maybe more mature audience than the original trilogy.
Yeah, no, I would definitely say that. I think that's a similar lesson just told to a different audience, perhaps, right?
Right.
Yeah. All right, the last question on the list is, what is your favorite Star Wars quote?
Oh, man. This is hard because I have a lot of like random quotes in my head that I'll like say every now and then and stuff. Like I always feel like people are always like, what's your favorite quote? You know, and they're expecting something like, you know, John Hoey's line, I think is the, for my ally is the force and a powerful ally. It is, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, luminous beings are we and stuff. And mine, I feel like there's one that always sticks out in my head because I have a good friend from college and we're still really good friends. I think he lives in Arizona right now. And he always used to quote the most random lines from every movie, but he quoted this line specifically from Return of the Jedi all the time. And it cracked me up to no end because it was always randomly or in context to a situation, but he would go the part where Leia and Luke and all them have landed there. The strike team has landed on Endor and right. They like see the stormtroopers and Leia's like running off after him. He would always quote Luke's line of, I see them. Wait, Leia. Like, and the way he delivered it was exactly that. Like Mark Hamill, like signature, like whine on the end, Leia. And it was pitch perfect. And
to well, that was this itself there, right?
Dude, to this day, I still think about that line and crack up. And like when it comes up in the movie, I'm just like, I think of my buddy and I'm like, man, I love that line just because it brings back some fun memories, you know, from a fun time in my life.
I feel like I've said this a bunch of times lately. So I apologize to those people who listen regularly, but we've been talking about this particular question. Given the answer you gave, it's interesting because I find that, yeah, I have a couple Star Wars quotes that I love because they're, you know, very, you know, they're so meaningful and, you know, they can apply to my life or experience and blah. But the line that I use all the time is, what I really need is a droid that understands the binary language of moisture evaporators. But what was very funny, so my wife, who's not a Star Wars fan, who is actually debating whether or not she's going to come out to California to celebration, because she's like, you know, hey, I love you and the kids, but I don't know if I can do 4 days of that.
Right. I get it.
but just a couple days ago, I said something. I was just, you know, I was walking in the kitchen or something, and I said, you know what you really need? It had nothing. I wasn't going down the Star Wars line, and she said, a droid that understands the binary language. And I was like, all right, this is going to work out. This is going to be fine. So,
that's awesome. This marriage thing's working out. Okay, good. You're in my head.
But it's just that, you know, certain things, certain lines that you just knew. And it's and that you know, it's just the way Star Wars is just such a part of our life. And I have to say, after 50 plus episodes, it's a great way to end the show as well, because it always ends up sort of summarizing who that person is in one way,
right,
or another. It's, well, it's this very deep philosophical Yoda quote or something fun like you just said, and it comes around here to kind of what we were saying at the beginning, and that is this sort of the role that Star Wars plays in your life. It's it becomes an instant bond with, you know, you and I haven't met in person, but we have sort of this instant bond where you and I can get together and talk because it is a part of your life and it's been around for 42 years. It's been around longer than you have. And so it's quite an amazing thing. So that's I guess kind of a good place to start to wrap up. So maybe tell us where we can find you online.
Well, you know, you guys can follow me over on the app with all the people yelling usually, which is that narrows it down to basically all the social medias. But now you follow me on Twitter. I'm on there as Jerry the Cannon Junkie at the Cannon Junkie. And if you listen to our show, you know me and Scotty like have a shtick at the end where we just like, I mean, always are like stumbling through our where to find us. So you can find me on there. You can see me on the Bombad Cast. I'm usually running the social media over there. We both like kind of tag team it and stuff, but like we're you find, you know, the Bombad Cast's Twitter page, and we're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Bombad Cast. And so just honestly, if you search Bombad Cast in anything, it pops up. It's really kind of, again, like I said, it's fortuitous, but yeah. So if you've enjoyed this long rambliness of me, myself, yeah, come give me a follow. Come check me out. Follow the Bombad Cast.
Awesome. Well, that's great. And I hope to, are you going to be at Celebration this year or no?
The way it's looking right now, I'm awesome. It's looking like I'm gonna make it there, so I'm psyched, man.
That's very cool. Well, good. Well, I look forward to meeting you in person. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, man.
I'm sure we'll be keeping in touch. I hope to have you again on at some point in the near future.
Absolutely, Pete. And again, thank you so much for what you've done coming over and hanging out with us in the Bombad Cast too, man. We got to have you on too soon. But thanks for having me, man. Love it.
Well, that wraps it up for this episode of Around the Galaxy. Thanks to Jerry, and thanks you. Blah, 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 blah. You know, I'm just going to keep that, see if anybody's actually listening. You know, thank you very much, Sherry, for joining. If you're into the show, please like, subscribe, share, rate, and review us. Follow us on Twitter at ATGCast. And if you or someone you know would make a good guest, please drop us a line. So until next time, this has been Pete Fletzer, and we'll see you for our next trip around the galaxy.
Around the Galaxy is copyright 2020 Pete in the Seat Studios. Our music is brought to us by the band Apollo's Ghost, who can be found on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you find music.